Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. How are you doing, brother?
I am okay, and you?
Hi, Errol Hurley here. I know you haven't heard me for a little while.
Yes, sir.
I'm not talking politics today. I'm talking disabled today. Mr. Ellis, I am very concerned and about the blind and visually impaired people in Barbados being independent or more independent. What I'm calling about, there is an app who the blind and visually impaired people in the other parts of the world have that they can go and read currency. It is in Trinidad right now. That's the only place in this part of the Caribbean that that app is available. Now, how you get the app is that you have to send currency, literally currency, 150, 20 times, whatever, to the Czech Republic so that they can create the app. Now, the problem that we have in Barbados, Mr. Ellis, is that it is illegal to send a legal tender outside of Barbados like that. You can't write a check or send a money order because it has to be the currency. What I would like, Mr. Ellis, for the blind and visually impaired people in Barbados so that we can be able to read our own money when we go to the supermarket is that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Ministry of Finance work with us because we have applied at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs for assistance, but we haven't received any response back from them. Now, the best way to do that, Mr. Ellis, is that we have a consulate or embassy or whatever you want to call it in Brussels, which is in the European Union, which is much closer to the Czech Republic. And they can probably put it in the diplomatic pouch and send it over to the Czech Republic. And that way, it will be going from the consulate in Europe to the Czech Republic, because if we have to send it from Barbados, they're telling us we have to put it in a magazine and post it. Now, you know, if it goes in the magazine and get hold up and what happened? Because in Trinidad, the guy that did it in Trinidad sent the money up to the Czech. They claimed he was going to get it back, and he never received the money back. But it is very important that the blind and visually impaired in Barbados get this app, because when we go to the supermarket or we go to the bank or wherever, we would have to be asking someone, is this a 20 or is this a 10? The phone.
So you're saying to me that you are not able to complete this transaction via Visa card or MasterCard?
No. You have to have the actual currency.
Actual currency?
Yeah, you have to send a $100 bill, a $50 bill, a $20 bill, no. A $10 bill.
Okay, so bill. I want to ask you what discussion have you had with any government department on this so far?
Yes, okay, let me say to you that our former Senator Kerry Ann Ifill, she made representation to the Ministry of Finance to get this done, but they haven't responded back to her as yet, and this is a good little while now.
So there's a need to follow up on this, because
yes,
I think in your situation, if there's an app that can assist the visually impaired in the way that you're suggesting, then I cannot see the government of Barbados turning a blind eye to that. And therefore, perhaps, you know, it's a question of just trying to remind someone that of the urgency of it. And to try to see, you may have to tackle it on more than one front. Speaking to the Ministry of Finance may not be enough. You may very well have to speak to another government department to see if you could get...
That's why I'm telling you, the other government department is the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, because they who have to give the...
That's the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but you also have at least one other government department there that should be involved in trying to assist you on.
Well, the only other department that would be able to assist us is the one that Cynthia Ford.
Precisely.
And all of this ground have been covered, Mr. Ellis. If all of this ground wasn't covered, Mr. Ellis, I would call you.
And how long have you been waiting for word from them?
This is 2020, from late 2018.
No, that's because not good enough. That's
when I go to Trinidad in 2018,
that's
when
normal.
I went to Trinidad in 2018 and 2019 to take part in the Calypso competition down there, my Trinidadian colleagues, when I had my money, could take their phone and say, "Well, Errol, let me check it for you." And they put their phone, and the phone said, "Oh, you got a $5 bill, you got a $10 bill." It cannot happen in Barbados because the app, it is not available on the app for Barbados. To get the United
States. What's the app called?
Oh dear me. The name slipped me right now, but it is something currency. Currency identifier or something like that there, so. But it is available to other countries. And what I'm saying is that it is very important for blind and visually impaired persons to have this app to be independent.
Okay, I take the point that you're making. It is just a question now of the best method to use to follow up. And I mean, the very fact that you've raised it here may well put some of those who monitor this program, those who work in government, to see if they can follow up on the correspondence that has been sent to the various government departments and see if we can speed it up and find a solution to the problem.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
There's another one called TIPC. TIPTAPSWE.
What's that?
TIPC. TIPTAPSWE. Now, that one, you take a picture of the currency, and then it tells you what currency it is. But the thing is that that is not very reliable, because that can take a picture. And sometimes they tell you, oh, it is €5 or five whatever. They don't give it. It's not an accurate one. There's something also called where you have the currency or any item at all, be it canned food or anything, and you turn on your camera, and there are actual people who will tell you what it is. They call it my eyes. Those are actually people that will tell you. But if you don't want everybody to know your business, and you wanted to do it independently, we need an app that can read the currency. Now, I have a device here that I bought at the National Federation for the Blind Convention in Orlando, Florida, in 2015. When you turn it on, you hear beep, and when you put it to your shirt or your pants, it tells you the color of your shirt. It tells you the color of your pants. Now, what I do is that I am a Barbadian. I will be able to know my currency. But if a person comes to Barbados, I have that device, I put it to a Barbados dollar. They don't know if it tells you move. A foreigner don't know that a move, the move means that it is a $20 bill. Now, I can do that because I live in Barbados and I know the colors of my currency. And I do that there for now. When I want to go to the supermarket, if I go in anywhere, before I leave home, I put that device to my money and it tells me how much money I have
in
my wallet.
The point here is that you have several options available for assisting you. You don't necessarily have to go through the Czech Republic from what I'm seeing here. There are several others. So it is trying to sit down with the authorities and working on the best possible plan. I have no doubt that there are people in Barbados who have looked for and found options other than just the one in the Czech Republic. But if you all determine as a group that that is the best available one, then let's hear from the authorities. It is taken too long. If you're saying that it goes way back to 2018, late 2018, that cries out for action. All right. Thank you very much for calling.
The people here and do what we are asking.
All right, sir.
Okay.
Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Here.
You are on the air.
Good day, sir.
Yes, good day.
I looking at page 3. Of today's nation. I don't know if you see it. No confidence push CRB members for a resolution for a vote against board.
Yes.
Right. This seemingly, in my opinion, is very bad, because people who are, let's say, not being members, I don't know if it's members of the credit union or who, but the board could find it fit to ratify somebody for an $8,000 job per month before the approval of a section of the Board of Management, especially now that the Financial Services Commission had zeroed in on this and did not give it its blessings. I don't know if you have any information on it.
It seems to be a work in progress as far as the FSC is concerned.
Yes.
But people who are within the COB seem impatient as it relates to the time that it is taking to get action on what they consider to be something that is unacceptable.
Right.
That's what is coming through to me, so I have to wait and see where it goes from here, whether the people who are making this push to get these people removed will be able to achieve the objectives.
Yeah, but they're filing a motion, a confidence motion against the board.
Yes.
And they want that within 3 weeks or so that...
Well, they have to be able to muster the membership to do it, you know.
Yeah, but you see, today I call the credit union. As a member, I call the credit union. I try to get some clarity from within.
Well, how do you feel as a member?
As a member, I feel that this is actually a betrayal of the members by the board of the credit union.
How?
Based on the fact that this has been in the office for quite a while.
So what makes it a betrayal of the members, I mean?
Because at that time or sometime they have been kicking against it, but they have not at least heard the members, and they continue to employ the person concerned.
Well, in these things, there's more than one side to every story. And I would expect that in the circumstances, the board would also be taking advice. They have rules and regulations by which they should be guided. I think one assumes that there are right-thinking people who would have the best interests of the COB at heart.
It doesn't appear so.
Not to you, but that a lot depends upon what information you have, because you may not have all of the information. So in these circumstances, one has to assume that the advice that they have been given suggests that they are in the right with respect to the decision that they have taken. And in those circumstances, they have decided to stick by that decision. Now, it is quite possible that at the end of the day, the membership, some elements of the membership may feel, as they currently do, that they're not satisfied with what has happened, and therefore they are taking a different route to achieve the objective. But I want to say to you that it is dangerous to come to a conclusion based upon information from only one side. The other factor you have to take into consideration is this. This is a financial institution in the country. A board making a decision of that nature would be very reluctant to come and put all of its information out there in the public domain. Both sides really need to be conscious of this reality, while at the same time fighting for what people perceive to be the right thing. They need to be cautious that in so doing, it does not harm this financial institution. So the people who sit on the board must recognize that they have a fiduciary responsibility, and therefore they have to be exceedingly cautious in how they address this particular matter. I therefore suggest to you that as a member, you need to get behind this. You need to get on the inside, get a better understanding of what the issues are, and then you can come to a conclusion. You have to ask, for instance, for the report that the FSC has prepared. As a member, I suppose you should be entitled to that kind of information. And that's what you should do. You got to fight that matter on the inside, because you know you don't. These matters have a way of taking useful organizations, and we complain all the time about how we lack this and we lack that. But you can have something that will emerge and just start to tear apart something that has been useful to so many people over the years. And that's not to say that you don't push to get what has been, what you consider to be wrong, corrected, but it is the method that you employ to achieve it. Okay?
All right, sir.
Good. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air. It's 12:22. Hello?
Good morning. How are you?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well.
No, Mr. Ellis?
Yes, sir.
I want to ask you some questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I want an honest answer, if you can give me that. Would you say that we are more ignorant, more educated, or have more common sense than 50 years ago?
I think that's generally accepted. Don't you think so?
But which one you feel it is? Which OT2 or you feel it's all three?
All three.
Mm-hmm. So then, I left a document for you yesterday. You receive it?
A document?
Yes.
I see a document. Somebody's handed to me this morning. I opened it up. We can figure out what you were telling me. It had no background information. It just had, you know, some figures and stuff in it. What was that about?
No, you remember you told me, you asked me if I wrote it or if I got tight with dealing with education and the reform of schools.
Something that was written years ago?
But David, written years ago is relevant today.
But it wasn't put in context. So I look at this piece of paper.
And you do.
I said, listen.
But David, that is a straightforward thing. Okay, I will do it properly now for you, for an educated person. Okay? Because
of
every boy that I gave that to understand what I am saying,
and
you the only boy that don't understand.
No, I understood it as a recommendation that you had made years ago. But then you needed to then say to me, okay, I think it remains applicable today, and these are the reasons why. It wasn't contextualized. I thought you had a dream or something, so you'd wake up and put this thing down on the paper and you wanted to show me that you are a dreamer.
Well, you would believe that anyhow. You don't stray me from my point. No. Last night and this morning and the 8:30 news, 5:30, the Prime Minister asked why she could not pick Miss Tony Moore as the candidate. David, could I say why?
Of course you can.
My enemies, my family, my friend suffered because of Akinyi McDonald as president and Tony Moore because they refused to take the $2,500 payout from Fandel's Church. And they were then given a 5% increase. And on top of it, they were sent home. Not only that. Hello?
I'm listening.
And why we should also reject the Prime Minister is that the Prime Minister also says that all the people that Fandel sent home, she will rehire. Now, Mr. Ellis, when I speak...
When did she say that?
She said during 2018...
That she would rehire all?
All. And she said if the South Coast don't get fixed, she's going to send home everybody and pay them, all the hotel workers.
I didn't remember hearing that.
Yeah, because... You is a Belgian with short memory. I am a Belgian who recollect all the information.
I don't remember that one at all, that she was going to send home all the people.
Yes.
I never thought that the Prime Minister in opposition advocated that we would shut down the whole of the South Coast.
She says she gets shut down the whole South Coast, get it fixed, and pay the people.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't stand out as something that was said at the time, but it may be wrong, you know. Can't remember everything. But what I got to do with this thing, the situation with Ms. Moore and the decision to run her as a candidate?
She should be rejected because she refused to help the workers.
Well, in your judgment, but if you listen to her, you hear a different interpretation of it, which is that at the point, it may be argued, that it is possible that she never really contemplated going into active politics all back then, and saw herself as a trade unionist. And looking at the circumstances that prevailed at the time, made the best decision and made the best recommendations that she could have back then. That's the other side to that.
Yes, but that is telling me you go into a relationship to do two things. Either quit the partner or get married.
So you thought that she went into this relationship with the union to get married to the Labour Party?
No, to get what she can get out of it.
Yeah, but of course...
No. David, listen to me.
I'm listening.
The Prime Minister said that we are in this together. But we are in this together because the business sector in this country is better off now because the poor people, and I get what we're talking about, the poor people in this country used to use Amazon to bring in the things. Look, David, I can show you how serious this thing is. I call a company to get a gasket for a fridge. They charge me $800 for a gasket for a fridge door. And you know I call the state that I can get for $80?
I understand that. The price of things that are brought in that way has escalated tremendously. It really is a major difference now, and therefore it discourages people from going online to buy things and bring them in. And that is not only a question of price, but sometimes it is also a question of quality. Because when you look around here to get certain things, you can't get that quality at all, no matter who is selling them. But that's the reality. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks, going until 2 o'clock today. Who do we have on the line?
Good afternoon, David.
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
There are four issues I would like to raise this afternoon. The other night, when Tony Moore was nominated to be the candidate in the St. George North election, both she and the Prime Minister spoke about the benefits that could accrue to the Labour movement if she is successful. But don't you think there's cause for concern when there appears to be an alliance between the major employer and a major union in a
country? Did you not see that before? How come you're seeing it now? You've had ample time to assess that. Way back, you know, especially since the days of Sir Frank Walcott and the Barbados Workers' Union. So if you raise that question, I have to ask you, didn't you see that? And based upon the performance of the people who were associated with the Barbados Workers' Union and those who were and their association with the Democratic Labour Party, can you answer the same question that you just posed to me?
But these persons were in the light, operating in the light, but this seems to be coming out of the dark.
Let me explain that to me. I don't understand
Nobody knew that Senator Moore was a member of the BLP.
Well, if you listen to what was said last night, the Prime Minister said that she was made a member last week.
She was made a member last week?
Yes, and she said that, according to her, the word she used was that they abridged the rules or the Constitution or whatever, the rules, so that she could become a member. That didn't tell us what exactly they did, but she was not sitting as a member of the Labour Party all these years. She just became a member last week. So, I mean, that raises other questions about, you know, the other people who aspired in the branch and that sort of thing, the normal process in the branch or any branch of the Labour Party, you know, that is not something that you can just gloss over like that. But I suppose you know how things are in Barbados. Some people, in this current environment, there are some people who would gloss over it, and then there are others who would say, but tell me more.
All right. No, she has been made a member. Will she still retain her seat as an independent senator?
Well, I can't imagine that she could be a member of the Barbados Labour Party or the Democratic Labour Party and still be classified as an independent senator. I would have thought that before all of this had taken place, the appropriate thing to do would have been to tender the resignation as an independent member. Look, there are a lot of things that can happen today that make you smile and make you wonder if people understand what is called propriety, the proper way to do things. And they've got enough people who are around Ms. Moore who can advise her on what should be done in these circumstances. I don't think it appropriate that she should go this far and leave that particular matter up in the air. I understand, you know, all that has been said, and I'm not getting involved in the pros and cons of that in terms of her decision, the timing of it, and all of that. That is that plays out in the normal political cut and thrust. But I don't feel comfortable, given the fact that she was appointed as an independent senator. She has now made the switch and waits until she has actually been made a member of the Barbados Labour Party. I believe that at the point where she was asked to make the decision, once she had made that decision, then by now we should have known. Now, it is quite possible, that that letter might have been tendered already and we don't know. All right? But I can only go on the basis of what we know so far.
Okay.
I mean, at the end of the day, you come back to a position of trying to make sure that you dot your I's and you cross your T's and you show people that you know what is the appropriate way of treating with a particular office in this country. That is what is important in this particular matter, as far as I'm concerned, you know?
But this is also an organization that is talked a lot about integrity and transparency and all those things.
Somebody says here that an independent senator doesn't mean no affiliation, but that the GG saw it fit to appoint the member to represent the interests he or she determines. Well, that's one way of looking at it, but you've got to look at it from the point of view of how Barbadians have generally perceived the appointment of an independent senator. Independent senator was never, as far as I am aware, projected as somebody who carried an affiliation, a known affiliation, to a political party and is just the appointee of the GG. That's your interpretation. Whoever wrote that, I don't remember seeing it that way. And I don't think a lot of people in the country see it that way.
But if a person has declared her his or her affiliation,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if the GG had appointed some person as an independent center, and the GG didn't know of the person's affiliation, once a person now was appointed as an independent center and declares his or her affiliation, is incumbent on that person to resign from the Senate.
Because I think it would cast some shadow on the GG's appointment and designation of that person as an independent senator. Now, you know, they got independent senators and independent senators. There are people who carry their party affiliation and that sort of thing, but in the public domain, you may not know about it.
But
the fact that you are now endorsed as...
If a person has publicly come out and say, I am affiliated with a party, they can no longer be regarded as an independent.
Right. Once you have been endorsed as a candidate, then I think that takes it one step further in that regard. Anybody wants to dispute that? Surely you can, because I don't have the same, you know, there's never one opinion on these things. So I put my position to you, and it is there for you all to agree or disagree with it. Okay?
There's also what I consider subtle attempts to silence dissenting voices in this country.
Oh.
Is Corey Lane still a moderator?
Yes, and you hear him from time to time. As a matter of fact, you as you may recognize, because of the number of people available as moderators, we tend to rotate the moderators on certain days. And you will find that, generally speaking, I'm locked down to 2 days and Dennis is locked down to two. So then we rotate the other people. So I don't think that you can link any so-called subtle attempt at silencing anybody to us, because we are not party to that.
What about Lisa?
But Lisa left to go to take up a government job. So once she took up a government job in the sense as a full-time, you know, she was not able to grapple with all two at the same time.
Corey doesn't have a government
but
job.
But his gives him a degree of flexibility that I didn't think that in the interaction that we had, it suggested that, you know, she felt that it was necessary. She would not have had that time. His may be far more flexible because hers may well tie her down to specific hours and that sort of thing in the day.
So don't read anything
into that neither.
Larry Prescott was removed and he started to make noise. Something was dangled in front of him. And you're no longer hearing him making any noise.
Well, you know, You know, you're pretty impatient, though, you know. But how long ago that happened? Just a few weeks ago. What would you expect? With the passage of time, you are going to hear people. You will be in a better position to assess who is who. Who has been able to be silenced by whether they were given this or that. Or people who come to the position to say, look, I don't care whatever you give me. I have a position and I'm going to speak as I see fit. But it will take time to see that. Don't come to conclusions so early. One of the questions you have to ask, look, the other day, the guy from St. Philip who resigned from the Labour Party, Anthony Wood, came out saying so much and this and that. I would think that one would expect to see him somewhere in St. George North campaigning. If not campaigning, at least articulating its position on some of these issues. I don't know. But based upon what was said at that time, you would have thought so. Now, with the passage of time, you've realized that there's a degree of silence there. So, you know, who knows?
I can only sit down here and watch. I want the DVD buses. Now, $20 million were spent in bringing in the new buses. I'm saying that the government could have saved this $20 million by amalgamating more privately owned vehicles into the system. If they had done that, they would not have to pay for any maintenance or they would not have to provide any fuel for those.
Amalgamating vehicles. The what? You mean a TAP program?
Yeah.
So you think that's a long-term program? I mean, isn't that as a consequence of COVID and the fact that the tourism industry shut down and many of those coaches would normally be associated with tourism? I mean, whenever we get back to normal, what's going to happen? They're going to come back out of that system and we are going to be back to square one, old buses and that sort of thing. You would do that?
Well, I am saying that the government would have saved $20 million.
Government has to be long-term, man. The government has to look at a medium and long-term.
I'm looking at the government getting out of the transportation business.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just regulating it. They would just act as regulators.
All right, then. And then what happened to all the people in the long-haul routes?
All the people there?
On the long-haul routes and stuff?
But they would get buses to run on those routes.
All right, then.
They would offer people buses to run on those routes.
Okay, you go ahead.
They will be $20 million richer. And I'm saying that they do not worry to import any more new buses.
Whenever
they want to replete the fleet, they amalgamate people.
It is very easy for us to sit down in our armchairs and come up with these plans. But you know what? The day that you implement them, then you see all of the weaknesses that can come at you and the politics associated with it, the fallout that can go with it. I am not persuaded at this stage that Barbados can really just surrender its public transportation system to the private sector. Private sector interests are relatively narrow. If it does not make money, it does not run. It's as simple as that. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon, Miss Ellis.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm well.
Miss Ellis, let me ask you a question. If you were in the position, would you put your integrity and reputation on the line to accept the post?
Well, you know, if it were me having to make that decision, I would have to think long and hard about it. As a matter of fact, I couldn't tell you offhand what decision I would make. A lot depends upon what is put before you. People have to go home and consult. Sometimes you have to look at your children and that sort of thing. This classification of being, what do you call, you know, a politically exposed person. Because I hear people talk about the abuse and stuff. To tell you the truth, I ain't so sure that a lot of men in politics get abused about here. Bad. They don't get up and say I get cursed because I'm a man. But they get cursed real bad. But that apart, being classified as a politically exposed person means that you could go to the bank to do business. You got to write up a whole set of paper. Your children, your husband, anybody close to you. And that scares people as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you can't sit down and make a decision like that all on your own. You have to talk with other people.
So Mr. Ellis, I was pretty sure that I heard last night at the meeting that the decision was made in about 7 days or so of the proposal being offered to the individual.
And what's wrong with that?
But as you just outlined, Mr. Ellis, you just told my...
That's me. You asked me how I would react.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else can make a decision in a day. As a matter of fact, there are people, if you put that to them, who said, yes, I wanted that ever since.
So then you will have to, and this is the point here, right? That Ms. Motley and the Barbados Labour Party obviously is going down the road of a gender issue. But what people are really thinking about is that they're adding all of the things that would have happened prior to 2018 with what is happening now. And they, in their own minds, are finding a link to what is happening now to what's happened in the past.
So example, I don't understand what you're saying.
You have, for instance, a case where you had the May Day. You remember the May Day speech in 2016? And the Miss Moore was on a platform, and she said, in no uncertain terms, she suggested that the workers should refrain from casting the vote for Ronald Jones, who was the then Minister of Education, since he didn't meet with them at their convenience. And then you also have the case, and another caller raised this to you as well, where they lobbied the last government for a 23% increase in public servant salary. And the lobby for that on months on end, but then in comes Auntie Mia and the Barbados Labour Party.
It's not as simple as that.
And Ms. Moore and the other leaders ended up being...
It's not as simple as that. It is not as simple as that. I feel, and that's part of the reason why I am listening to comments that have come from the guy from C2SAB, who has charged that the social partnership has not been meeting in recent times. All right? I felt that one of the big weaknesses associated in the relationship between the former administration, the unions, and the private sector had to do with the fact that the social partnership did not meet enough. And I think it would be a big mistake if this administration allows the relationship with the social partnership to slip away. Indeed, if Ms. Moore holds on to the position of General Secretary of the Barbados Workers Union, it will be interesting to see that she will be operating at two levels now.
But
she will be operating within the administration, whether that is just as a backbencher or in the executive, and she will still be expected to participate at the level of the social partnership, which is has turned out to be crucial. I felt that the Dems failed to use the social partnership effectively for a long time, and that created a kind of distance between them and the other partners.
Well, first of all, Mr. Ellis, I wouldn't see the logic in bringing Ms. Moore into the government and then putting her on the back bench. I believe that she's going to be getting the job that Honorable Colin Ford has, Colin Jordan has right now. The second thing, Mr. Ellis, is that I do not see the practicality of Ms. Moore retaining the seat of General Secretary of the Union and also being in government, because as the old people will tell you, you can't serve two masters. What's going to happen if, and we've seen in recent times, up to the other day, another hotel shut down and sent home a few people, well, more than 100 people. And also, we've seen cases, too, where the government might do things that are that seem to affect negatively the rights and the, you know, the comfort of public servants. So when these cases come up and the government takes a particular position on the case, but the union's position is supposed to be different since they're supposed to be fighting on behalf of the workers, there's going to be a conflict of interest.
Okay. Let me ask you something. You have been calling this program for years. But let me ask you, you're relatively young. Are you aware that under the Democratic Labour Party, previously the DLP administrations, trade union leaders were part of the administration of previous DLP governments?
Did they hold on to their posts as General Secretary?
Yes. What happened to Leroy Trotman when he was General Secretary? He took over from Sir Frank Walcott. Don't you remember that?
But you
need perhaps do some research, because you seem to be out to sea on this.
Mr. Ellis?
Because you see, I'm suggesting to you that on that point, you have to look at the history of the relationship between the trade unions. And don't look just at the BWU, you know. Look at the NUPW as well.
Mr. Ellis, look, I don't understand, right? Whenever something happens in the country, people always revert to what would have happened in the past, as if persons in present and future time can raise the bar. So John could kill Mary because Barry killed Susie. So somebody else did it, so I could do it, and I could even do it.
I'm making to you. I'm only making one point to you. If you want to establish that being a leader of the trade union leads to a conflict of interest that will work against the interests of the workers, then you have to look at trends over the years to help support that argument. And if you look at some of the things that have happened over the years, some will argue with you that it has gone in the opposite direction. Example, the no confidence motion against Erskine Sandiford. When Leroy Trotman was part of that in the House of Assembly. Okay?
So, Mr. Ellis, I just want to get from you, basically. You're saying that because X person does it, Y person should be able to do it too. Instead of raising
That's
the bar.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying to you that for some people, and this depends upon the personality, there are some people who will go into such a position and say, my first responsibility is to the constituency that has put me in a position to run for political office. That first constituency is the union that I lead and that I represent. There's another person who is going to be put in a position where they feel compromised because they may have a political leader who on a given point will call for the party whip and may not necessarily want to give that individual the kind of latitude, or the person it may themselves lack the kind of strength that will put them in the position where they feel intimidated. So it depends upon the individual. But it is not natural to say that because you occupy one, you will logically be influenced by following the government line to the disadvantage of the workers or the people that you represent otherwise.